just to start by assessing whether are we all here together? Any apologies that you receive?
Thank you. So far, Chairperson, you are four.
Okay.
Members.
The four members, yes.
Yes.
Let's hope the honorable members will join us along the way.
But there's no
any apologies that you see from members.
There is.
Okay, let's. You said it's Lord?
Yeah, it's honorable Lord. Yeah, that is the only apology we received from the committee members, and also the apology from the minister that I believe it is you.
Okay.
With it, yes.
All right. Now, I think on that note, let's then take this opportunity to extend a word of welcome to all the honorable members of the committee, the team from the parliament, the committee secretary, the researchers, parliamentary group, the media, but a special word of welcome to the deputy minister and her team. Indeed, we are meeting today as per the legislative requirements in terms of ensuring that we prepare ourselves in terms of the platform to receive the annual performance plan of the Department of Public Works. We are looking forward to hear progress that we are making with regard to the key strategic issues that were raised in the department's draft plan. And amongst those key areas, we were informed that in terms of priority, the development and maintenance of government property is quite key, particularly given the portfolio of property under PMTS, but also the fact that the department is also seized towards the prestige projects. Secondly, the infrastructure development progress that we are making, given the reconfiguration of the department, is quite important for us to get a sense in terms of where we are. Progress with regard to how far we are with regard to the coastal towns, particularly under the small harbors. I think those are the issues that were raised with us last year. But more than that, the contribution that we are making with regard to the economic recovery plan, in particular the job creation, the role that the department is playing with regards to turning the economy around, but more than that, the progress that you are making under the intensification of the expanded public works program as part and parcel of cushioning the vulnerable. So having said that, let me then give over to the Deputy Minister to give the opening remarks. Over to you, DG, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. A good morning to your good
myself, as well as a good morning to all the honorable members of the committee. Allow me also to greet the acting DG and his team, the team that supports the portfolio committee, and the guests that may be amongst us, especially from the media. First, I appreciate the opportunity provided to this department because if opportunities like this, we tend to overlook and forget that they are the basis on which we can claim to be a democratic country. And therefore, Chair, it's an opportunity for us to account to the people of this country through our parliament, especially being the MCOP to the provinces of our country. Honorable Chairperson, also an opportunity given to us as a department, a department that truly can give meaning to the constitutional prescript, especially the preamble of our constitution. This is a department that can contribute to healing the divisions of the past, because it is a department that I normally call umastandi of the country. Umastandi is the landlord in English. It's a department that can therefore give meaning to the changes that are necessary to heal those divisions of the past by dealing appropriately with the spatial development of our country through land, through management of the land, as well as the landlord, ensuring that that land that we have as a country is able and accordingly redistributed. But also in terms of laying the foundations of a democratic and open society, this is a department that can contribute equally to that. Remember that all departments depend on this department in terms of their own infrastructure, whether they are social or economic cluster department, whether they are governance departments. They depend more on public works. But for me, the most important role of the department, which is also encompassed in our constitution, is that of improving the quality of life of all citizens and the opportunity. This department has that capacity and has that ability to improve the quality of life of all citizens and to free the potential of each person. Job creation contributes to freeing the potential of each citizen. I can go on, Chair, but I was just trying to illustrate the importance of your work in helping us to account to the nation, to take stock in terms of to what extent have we been able to impact the lives of the people. I have with me in terms of the programs of the department to realize the changes that I was talking about. And therefore, Chairperson, I'm not going to waste more of your time. I will invite our acting DG, Mr. Imtiaz Faisal, to help us with the presentation that we have brought to the department, but just to illustrate our appreciation again of the opportunity. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, dear, for the indeed introductory remarks and opening remarks, laying the foundation for the acting DGs to Mr. President to take the center stage. If the DG can, or if the PM can just probably try to sort out, I think there's too much light which overshadows the DM, probably, so that when we wrap up, that area is at the best. It was too, but then couldn't see the deputy minister. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister and Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee. Good morning to all of you. I'd like to mention to the committee that we have all the members of our executive committee present to answer all the possible questions the committee might have in our presentation, Chairperson, on the 2021-22 annual performance plan, as well as the budget vote for the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. And associated with this, Chairperson, we also present the budget and the annual performance plan elements of the property management trading entity of the department. That's our property arm. Chairperson, without wasting time, I'll move straight to slide number 6, if my colleagues can assist me. And I want to reflect that we are now in the second year of the sixth administration in the planning
season. My apology, DG, you have an hour to make presentation so that Mel can
thank you very much, Chairperson. That is noted. So, moving on to slide number 6, in the introduction, we are now in the second year of our 5-year cycle, working towards our strategic plan over the 5-year cycle. And our planning principles are informed by the new DPME planning framework, which is informed itself by a results-based methodology, also informed by the fact that we need to embed planning for women, children, and people with disabilities in our plans. It must also have a high level of stakeholder consultation, not the least being our own public entities who are part of our broader delivery model. And aligned, there's also a broader monitoring and evaluation system in place to ensure that we are able to report on this. Next slide, Chairperson. The priorities of government are reflected on slide, and as a department from the 7 priorities of government, where we, given our infrastructure and accommodation mandate as a custodian of the immovable assets of national government, we've then unpacked our own priorities into 7 outcomes that are reflected in blue in the slide before us, Chairperson. Because ultimately what it means, if I start on the bottom right, that we need to create a resilient, ethical, and capable department. That is our primary objective, to deal with the foundational issues and the foundational and fundamental matters that affect our resilience and ability to operate as a department that is responsive to our client needs, that is ethical, free from corruption and maladministration. So that's the first outcome that we aim towards over our 5-year period. We move further to a sustainable infrastructure investment, where in recognizing the department's mandate of promoting infrastructure and infrastructure investment in the country, we work towards contribution to the product and gross capital formation, and harness infrastructure, as the President has mentioned in his address on a number of occasions, talking about infrastructure as a flywheel of the economy. And the department, as a result, must then harness infrastructure to ensure that infrastructure plays its due role in the economy in creating jobs, as well as creating a broader economic opportunity. And moving from there, Chairperson, we talk about a dignified client experience. We have all national government departments being the clients of the National Department of Public Works. And our goal is to ensure that we provide them with a dignified experience. When people have buildings, they receive services. We provide, chairperson and members of the committee, we provide the buildings through which national government departments provide public services to the citizens. And we need to recognize that. And our outcome is to provide a dignified experience to all those who use government buildings for public services. And moving from there, chairperson, to the left and the top of the tree is the optimized job opportunities. And it reflects your opening comments, chairperson, and those of the deputy minister. We recognize our role in the Extended Public Works Program as government's flagship public employment program, creating work opportunities for the poor and unemployed to create public assets and contribute to development. So that's the fourth outcome we aim for over 5 years in creating these 5 million work opportunities. And moving to the left is a transformed built environment. There, chairperson, we recognize that we have a number of public entities, being the Construction Industry Development Board, which are responsible for the transformation of the construction industry, as well as regulation of the construction industry. We also have the Council for the Built Environment, and that council coordinates the work of the built environment professions, being the architects, the engineers, the landscape architects, the construction project managers, the quantity surveyors, and the valuers. And what we like to see is a transformed built environment from a demographic point of view. First of all, this built environment must reflect the demographics of the country and transform. And we have a huge transformation deficit to overcome in the first instance. And second, we also recognize that as the custodian of government assets and the largest owner of land in the country in the public service, we have a duty to transform the space and spatial transformation to overcome apartheid spatial patterns. And on a third level, chairperson and members of the committee, we are also responsible and contribute towards transformation from an economic point of view to use the 30 to 40 billion rand budget under our custodianship to ensure we bring about meaningful economic transformation of targeted groups. Moving on from there, chairperson, is productive assets. It's another outcome for the department. Productive assets talks to the fact that as the custodian of government assets, we own an asset base of in excess of 130 billion rands. We are the largest asset owner in the country, private or public. And we need to harness these to generate revenue for the state and contribute towards development and ensure that we have a cost recovery model that relies in the long term at a lesser level on contributions from the fiscus, and we make ourselves sustainable. And then finally is integrated planning and coordination is to plan with our public entities throughout the public sector, and in particular, using the district development model as a cue on how to plan in an integrated way so the tiers of government are not seen and we have a single view of service delivery, taking into account in particular that we have public works as a concurrent function, and we work closely with the 9 provincial Department of Public Works to create the single view of service delivery. Chairperson, with that platform, I'd like to go to the next slide and talk about our plans. We're presenting the two items on the top, the annual performance plan and the strategic plan, which is our long-term outcome. The long-term outcome is the three I mentioned in the previous page. And now I'd like to hand over to our DDG, Governance, Risk and Compliance, to talk about the annual performance plan and reflect on our targets for the current year and as well as the two outer years. And then that will be followed by the presentation of the budget. So I'd like to hand over to Mr. Luwazi Mahlangu, who's our DDG for Governance, Risk and Compliance. Mr. Mahlangu, over to you.
Thank you, Acting DG, and good morning, Chairperson of the Core Select Committee, members of the Select Committee, Deputy Minister, Acting DG, and Executive of the Department. Chair, without taking much time, I'll just take over from the Acting DG and look at the details of the high level provided. So I'll just quickly go to our mandates, Chair. In the interest of time, I'll just give you the sound bites and the details of our approach moving forward. And then I think the most of the issues will then cover them during question time. Chair, this is our constitutional mandate. You'll see Schedule 4, 5, and 6 and 25, which basically we relate to. And there are some indicators that then give effect to that constitutional mandate from a concurrent function which is our sector, the integrated approach that the acting DG talked about, as well as working with the district development model to inform government planning, and particularly in the context of infrastructure, how do we plan, coordinate, and then implement infrastructure that then is, can we can drive the economic situation in the country, and particularly addressing unemployment, poverty, and inequality through infrastructure. So that then touches on that. Section 25 of the Constitution, you will see that we talk about the expropriation bill. So it gives effect to that constitutional mandate through the expropriation bill. And then the other constitutional imperative, which are areas of compliance, we look at the Section 941, 114, 195. And these are areas basically that speaks to the constitutional values of constitutional values and principles that we also give effect. And these are underpinned by the outcome that was explained by the DGG in terms of the acting DG in terms of the resilient and capable and ethical DPW. And then the others is the that are driving the department is the GIAMA. Which is basically the programs on the asset lifecycle management of the assets. That's where the acting DG talked about the productive assets and the dignified client experience through those productive assets, fit for purpose and as servicing the citizens. So when we go talk about the Infrastructure Development Act, that is the eye of the DPW. That then touches on that outcome that speaks to sustainable infrastructure investment, where now we talk about the coordination of infrastructure up until implementation as well as funding models for the infrastructure. Land Affairs Board, as well as Land Affairs Board, will also to refer to the issue of administration of land, as well as our contribution from a DPW custodianship of land parcels in terms of our contribution to the socio-economic release of land for socio-economic purposes and land reform initiatives. The Council for Peace and Environment and Council and the Construction Industry Development Board, the professional councils, and these are our entities supporting the department, and they are also aligned to the strategic outcomes of the department in terms of their own mandate giving effect. I'll also highlight in some of the indicators in terms of how these entities are contributing in that regard. And then we've got the Expropriation Bill and State Land Disposal Act, which we also talked about. And then Land Disposal Act will also talk to the capital formation aspect of it, which is also part of your sustainable infrastructure development. And then our strategic focus, basically, Chair, without wasting time, I won't go into this. This is just the vision, mission, and our basically values. But the most important part is the impact, which is infrastructure and economic growth. And that's where we are leveraging on infrastructure to bring about that growth. As we were talking about the performance, the GDP, which was lower, as we close off 2020, we're sitting at about 7% minus GDP. And that has been highlighted as the second decrease since World War II. And that's basically showing that even projecting the GDP for the coming years, we're also seeing that there will be a slow pace of growth in that, and we need to bring about through infrastructure, how do we bring about or leverage on infrastructure to bring about that change. And then we're basically informed by the external environment. In other words, we go into the detail of the areas where we feed into and to try to change the status quo. And as acting DG highlighted, that the approach we have taken in planning is the results-based approach. So the approach is basically look at what is the situation on the ground, what is the problem statement, what are the initiatives, what are the resources that we have to say, then we can then develop the program and targets that then seek to address those issues. And then we then measure at a later stage what then is the change that we have. That's where the theory of change is our planning strategy. That's what we have employed. So we look at the COVID. That's one of the areas that we looked at, COVID and the implications to the economy. And we also looked at how the department then contributed to addressing some of these issues. Also looking at how the funds were also used, given the fact that we were operating under a tight fiscal situation, and we also had to look at how do we then best use every rand for a possible result. So we contributed to that. We participated in the National Joint Operation and Intelligence Structures, and we also expedited the SIPs. I think the chairperson in your opening opening remarks, you did allude to the SIPs, which I will also express the five strategic integrated projects and small harbors, which are within the ambit of the department. Transform built environment, I think this is an issue that also talks to the environment as well as how then do we bring about a transformed built environment. And this is where now the entities come into play together with our program, that's professional services, working together with the entities, looking at the pipeline from the schools, rural schools, all the way to candidacy and being trained expertise and the skills that are required in the transformed in the construction industry, and then that's also to bring about or build capacity in house or nationally for future infrastructure projects, so that we don't find ourselves importing skills and we already have in house. And then the using infrastructure, economic growth, unemployment, and also the national strategy plan for gender based violence and femicide. So we've also looked at that. And we are contributing to that two pillars. There are about six pillars in the National Strategy Plan that we contribute from empowerment, participation, all the way to dignity of women, and particularly those that have suffered in terms of the gender violence and femicide. So we also contribute to that. Internally, Chair, this talks to basically our structure, resources, as well as ICT capacity, particularly when we're looking at how do we modernize business processes. And given the fact that we are now operating remotely and not necessarily, you know, in a staggered approach, we are also operating from the offices, but then how do we use the tools to still give effect to government services operating remotely? So those are some of the issues that we're looking at. And then we're also looking at the financials and the performance issues in terms of how do we then use every rand to give effect to the performance that we see or the deliverables of the department. And then the last part in terms of the implementation of the infrastructure delivery mechanism or system of managing the asset lifecycle, we also are streamlined that with the infrastructure aspect, which is your South African Seeds project, the system, which is your systematic approach to project formation, project management, and project capitalization, as well as implementation, which is basically the strategy and how it's used to look at bankable infrastructure projects that can then be, and I'll also touch on some of them, which SIPs also a part of them, some of them. Now, in terms of that, Chair, I won't go into detail on that in terms of the detail of these outcomes as per the APP and the targets that we have. I think suffice to say is just to give you the sound bites in terms of the intention of each, and then I think then the members will then ask questions in terms of the individual aspects. Now, in terms of the resilient, ethical, and capable, our focus is looking at governance issues. We're looking at management of risk. We're looking at corporate services in terms of the organogram. That is basically looking at the changes in the environment and looking at the resources to respond to the changes of those environment and ensuring that we've got an organizational structure that then responds to these changes, and then also looking at business processes and modernizing our processes to give effect to a fully functioning and a responsive organization. And also we're looking at in the pandemic, I think COVID-19 also brought about a new issue of how then do we build in what you call the business continuity in the organization, such that when the shock in the system, the organization keeps is able to sustain itself. That comes in, and we do have a business continuity plan that then assists in doing that. I think this is a large organization where the supply chain mechanisms need to be worked in such a way that you speed up the process of delivery through this mechanism of supply chain initiatives as well as deliverables of those. So this is a breakdown of these indicators. What we've also done is that you see from the top all the way to the end, the top row, we've looked at the priority, which is what the acting teacher looked at. We then looked at the medium-term strategic framework, the indicators that are here highlighted that we report to the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, where they focus on the deliverables and the program of action of government. And then we also looked at the focus on the targets of the Minister, we're looking at the responsibility of the minister as well, the agreement with that for that delivery. And then we also align that to the strategic plan document that we have in terms of all those areas that minister delivers on, as well as the targets for the 5-year. And then we break these targets in terms of the annual performance plan indicators that we then feed into this. And then we also show the outer years, which is the MTF, medium-term expenditure framework, that basically shows the outer 3 years in terms of the targets moving forward aligned to that. So you then see that we are in the second year, 2021-22, and then if you add these other 3 years, they will give you the 4 years, and then also have the 5 years, that then shows you the MTSF. So our indicator here basically is the consolidation of all these aggregated into a balanced scorecard. And the balanced scorecard mainly focuses, as we talk about the resilient, capable, and ethical department, the balanced scorecard focuses on those issues in terms of what is the financial health of the organization, what is the business processes, that is the modernization of the business. We're looking at training and development, ensuring that you have the necessary capacity to drive the deliverables of the organization, and you're also looking at issues around the internal controls as well as the ethical conduct of the employees. Now, this also will be encouraged into a compliance rate where we also look at how we then comply with the rules and regulation. If I take the chairperson and the select committee members, earlier on when I talked about the constitutional mandate, the imperatives and compliance areas, all those are going to be couched into a compliance rate, which then basically into a compliance universe where we'll be expressing our compliance rate too. And then if you look at the audit general issues, there are also issues relating to compliance to legislation. So we are also dealing with those matters. Now, if you come back to this area of the minister's development, you will also see that it also touches on issues of ethics, elimination of wasteful expenditure, as well as dealing with the issues of audits as well. So this balanced scorecard catches all these elements so that we then give effect to an agile organization, capable and ethical. Then the next slide basically is the breakdown of these indicators in terms of this current financial year and then quarterly basis. What I would like to highlight, Chair and select committee members, is that we have three documents as shown on slide 9, where we show the strategic plan, the APP, as well as the operational plan. What you will find is that the annual performance plan is pitched at an output level that then correlates with the outcomes that are expressed in this strategic plan document. And then you'll see that at an output level, we are basically measuring what will be the output that drives that outcome that contributes to the priority of government. And then that will be then broken down into a quarterly basis. Now, if you see that in other quarters, it says not applicable. Now, the not applicable is because that this is not an output per se, but it's more activity-driven towards that output. And all these not applicable are reflected in the operational plan. Our operational plan is signed off by the accounting officer. It's a live document, a day-to-day document, and it's also a mandatory document. So when we present performance to the select committee, we'll be sure showing what was the activity of quarter one progress-wise, and then select committee members are able to see whether we are progressing towards achieving the annual target that is expressed in this quarter. So the not applicable are areas where there are operational activity-based issues that drive towards the target that is shown here at an APP, which is output. So that's basically the point of not applicable, the explanation of not applicable. So if I go to integrated planning and coordination, I'll just touch on that highlight. I can hear about fragmentation or fragmented government approach to planning. And this is why we are bringing it together in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of asset management, as well as our contribution to land reform. So we're bringing all these areas in terms of intergovernment. So one of the issues to maintain government relations, where we have a stakeholder matrix, where we focus on all the relevant stakeholders within the ambit or within the DPW framework or space, as well as the infrastructure, all the way to district development model to ensure that all the stakeholders participate in that and we have a common understanding of that. If I give you an example of infrastructure, there's infrastructure that is delivered by national, there's infrastructure delivered by provinces, there's also part infrastructure by local government. So the idea is a coordination so that if you say, for instance, you are building a school, then which is a competence of the provinces, then the issue is, are there bank services readily available, or is there bank services from the local government, so that when the school is completed, when you cut the ribbon, the learners are ready to go to the school, not that we start looking at where are the bulk services. So that is the integrated approach through the stakeholder matrix. Management of project management office, which will deal with the SIPs as well, because they highlight the integration as well as the role players and the stakeholders in the different spheres of government. Professional services, this is where we're talking about that pipeline, school pipeline, which basically is a coordination between the national provinces as well as assisting areas of where in local government where there's a need for certain professional services. And then the real estate investment services, this is where which basically speaks about the repair, revitalization of the Western Cape harbors, is basically removal of sunken vessels, dredging, repairs of slipways, shores. So these also have a potential to bring about, if you look at it from these small-scale professional skills, it can also bring about those skills in from that will come from the local sector or from the local towns to actually assist in that. So it's, you're also creating those jobs in those non-proclaimed or proclaimed harbors as well. So these are the projects that we're seeing in terms of SIP 21 repairs of that. And then the other SIPs is SIP 21 small harbors, which is what I've just explained. SIP 25 is the Wadi Suza program to provide access to South Africa's special community, especially crossing this, crossing rivers or providing safer networks for commuters in various areas to be able to commute between various areas. And then photovoltaic and water, again, I said the issues of contribution to the integrated resource efficiency plan, where there's water issues crisis in the country, as well as contributing to the climate changes, as well and contributing to energy services. CC29, which is urban management, which I talked about, responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as CC36, which basically talks to you mixed use of government precincts in Tshwane, which is already includes four-part private partnership for the development. I think that also talks to the issue of integrated planning. Also, if you look at that sustained infrastructure investment, we are seeing a split of 23%, 8% from government, 15% from the private sector. This will be through private partnership to bring about the role of the private and public working together towards realizing that infrastructure as a percentage of GDP. Then, so these are the small harbour developments. I've just explained that. Sorry, it's just repeating slide. Jay, I'm about to finish in the next 5 minutes. Transform built environment. The focus on transform built environment is in three areas. One, we're looking at the legislative approach. That is basically providing an environment that is conducive to for transform built environment. And with that, one of the areas is looking at expropriation bill. We're looking at the repealing of redundant bills that will hinder progress. We're also looking at Public Works Act to ensure that there's a coherent. Then we're also looking at other areas such as also empowering the councils, the entities of the department to also play a space in the built environment. So that is the legislative approach. The second aspect is the skills pipeline. We're now also working with the entities and the professional services to bring about that whole value chain, the demand pool and demand supply of skills within the built environment. And then the last one is what we call the participation rate, where we're looking at now the designated groups, women, youth, and people with disabilities, how they participate. And that also is giving effect to the triple BEE, that is actually under the Department of Trade and Industry, where the target, at the baseline we're moving from is basically 18%. And I think at some stage there was a coalition that 3% were in the JSE of black empowerment. But then now we're looking at now from a department point of view and through infrastructure and other initiatives within the mandate of the department, we're also trying to bring about an excessive participation rate of these designated groups to about 25% over a five-year period. So those are the three areas that I talked about, participation, built environment skills, as well as legislative support. And then this is the breakdown on a quarterly basis. Then the optimized job opportunity speaks of two areas. One, we're looking at permanent employment within the department, and that's where the professional services come in on board. We're also looking at the presidential stimulus package, where we also expressed an interest in drawing from the unemployed graduates, and then they also be on the job training, understanding so that they then are equipped with skills, and then across government can again then be deployed or absorbed in different areas within government, within the built environment. And there's also the bursary scheme, where we from the schools we provide bursaries within the built environment, and they participate and also up until they are candidates, and they then have the necessary skills within the built environment. The second aspect is the under this outcome is the work opportunities that are then delivered through the expanded public works program. And I think in the public works program, this is where you're looking at the work opportunities. We've got a 5 million target over the five-year period. And then in this 2021, we're still looking at 1 million. And then it's broken down into sectors, which is infrastructure, environment, and culture, social and non-state. And we're also looking at also per province breakdown. And then also Minister tabled a progress report in Cabinet, where there were these opportunities that were prevented, work opportunities that were created, about 865,495, and then where there's a breakdown province for municipal, national, and provincial that we can also supply to the committee as well, so that at least they can see from a provincial breakdown what has been the progress. And then moving forward, these are our targets for the next financial year. And then lastly is the dignified client experience. Now, this is what we call a three model or it's a three-stakeholder model that we are applying. First of all, we've got Public Works and the landlord, and also providing accommodation to user departments, which is the second stakeholder. And then the third world stakeholder is where now the user departments, who are basically in the front line, who provide frontline services to the citizens, the stakeholder, that stakeholder. We are looking at that thread where we are saying the productivity of the second layer, which is the user departments, in delivering services to the citizens will also depend on the Public Works as the landlord in how we also provide accommodation fit for purpose, productive assets is also maintained so that there is a lifespan and we generate revenue from that to maintain the building, as well as when they use a building that is fit for purpose by the second layer, which is the user department, this increases productivity and enables us to then deliver the better services to the citizen. So this is more at the issue here is the citizen at the center of government services, and that's basically how we're looking at it. So we've got stakeholders such as parliament and parliamentary board villages, where through our prestige program we're looking at providing those kind of services so that there's a better level of satisfaction from the clients or the users of those facilities, as well as planning precinct, which ensures that you bring government services to the people, and then real estate management services, which is the leasing aspect of it. So ensuring that whatever we lease, it's easy for leasing and also the revenue generated from those leases. And then construction through the accessibility projects, we're looking at the maintenance project, maintenance as well as facilities to ensure that that those are actually achieved. And then the clients or the user departments can actually improve on their productivity, because their focus is more on servicing the clients rather than focusing on the nature of the building and why the building. And that then becomes the responsibility of Public Works to ensure that the user department focuses on the services within their mandate. So, Chair, that's basically high level. And then the next slide is basically touch on the key risks that are associated with every outcome from ineffective implementation of governance compliance all the way to total collapse of infrastructure, which then seeks to look at productive assets and the initiatives that then seek to reduce this exposure to risk, as well as looking at productive assets, where we focus largely on how do we optimally utilize state assets so that we can from leasing and ensuring that landlords also participate in that, and also partnering with the private sector to ensure that we optimally use government facilities and their productive assets. So those are the areas, Chair, in terms of the first section. And then the next section is on the finance. Through you, Chair, Acting DG, the next slide then speaks to finance. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Lwazi, Chairperson, and members of the committee, through you. The first part is the main vote, which is the DPW itself, and the second part is our property section, the property management trading entity. I'd like to ask Mr. Aaron Mazibuko, who is the head of finance in the DPW, to present this, and then our CFO will conclude with the budget for the PMT. Thank you so much. Aaron, over to you.
Thank you, Acting DG, and good morning, members of the Select Committee and colleagues from the department. What we are going to present here, it is the budget allocation for the department over the medium-term budget, over the medium-term period. Now, in terms of the budget, the department has five programs, which is administration, intergovernmental coordination, expanded public works, which is EPWP, property and construction industry policy and research, and the last one is prestige policy. Now, over the medium term, we have the budget of 8.3 million billion for 21-22 financial year, 8.5 billion for 22-23 financial year, and 8.6 billion for 23-24 financial year. Now, I will not be going into the summary per budget because there are slides that are following for each and every program. So we can see how much we have for 21-22 financial year under administration, which include management, ministry, finance and corporate services. Then we also have budget for intergovernment. So I will not be going to that because we have them in terms of the programs in the following slides. Now, I will go to the economic classification to show how much is allocated per economic classification. Now, the first one, it will be compensation of employees, which is 571. And as you can see, there is no increase on the compensation of employees over the medium term, because for 21-22 we have 571, the following year 570, and we also have 571 for 23-24 financial year. So the department is expected to maintain the number of employees that are funded, because based on the Treasury guidelines, there is no salary adjustment that is factored in the compensation of employees. The second one is goods and services, which is 480 million, which is also increasing with a minimal amount, because between 21-22 and 22-23, we have 493, and for the last year, we have 494. Now, the bulk of the budget here is sitting under Program 1 and Program 3. Program 1, which is administration, and Program 3, which is EPWP. And the budget is more of supporting the activities of the department. Transfers and subsidies, it is equivalent to 7.3 billion. Now, the overall budget of the department, transfers and subsidies, is equivalent to approximately 87% of the overall allocation of 8.3. So it means the balance of 13%, that's what we have under compensation of employees and goods and services. Now, under the transfers and subsidies, we have provinces and municipalities. This is budget that is allocated for the EPWP incentives for the provinces and municipalities, for integrated and for the social sector. Departmental agencies, this is the allocation that goes to the entities, with the bulk of the allocation going to the PMTA. As you can see, we have 4.5 billion. Now, approximately 4.1 billion goes to the PMTE. The balance is allocated to CIDB, CBA, AGREMA, and parliamentary villages. Then the second one, or the following one, it will be foreign government. This is the money that is allocated for the Commonwealth, for the activities relating to the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. So this is an international allocation. Then the following one is public corporation and public private enterprise. The allocation here is for PICC. With the functions of the infrastructure moving to the department, the budget for PICC, which is managed under IDC, it is allocated under the department, and the budget is 87.9 million. Then the following one is non-profit institution. Under the non-profit institution, this is mainly for EPWP, for the non-state sector, and the budget is implemented through IDT. Then the household is linked to the leave gratuities. Then the balance now below, it is the payment for capital assets. So these are the assets that the department will be procuring to ensure that the employees have the furniture, including the computers. They are all classified under machinery and equipment. Then we can move to the next slide. Then the next slide just tells you what the money will be buying. So over the medium term, the department will be focusing on the creation of work opportunity, providing better oversight, cooperation and service delivery, and facilitating skills development in the construction and property sector. So as indicated, 87.4% of the total allocation over the medium term, which is equivalent to 22.2 billion, is allocated under the transfers for the department. And the balance of 12.4, which is 3.2, that is goods and services, and compensation of employees for the salaries. Then we can move to now to each and every program. So under the programs, this is the budget. Then the following slide is an analysis of what the money will be buying for each and every program. Because for each and every program, there is an objective for that particular program. Can you go back to the previous slide? In this slide, we have the sub-programs, which is ministry, management, which is the office of the director general, and internal audit, including GRC, government risk and compliance. Under corporate services, we have communication, we have HR, we have legal services, we have security, finance, then it's clear we have finance and SCM. Then the last one is an office accommodation. Under the office accommodation, this is the budget that is allocated for the municipal services and accommodation needs of the department. That will be either the state-owned or the leasing. Now, the bulk of the allocation in this program is sitting under compensation and goods and services, because program one is mainly to support both the department, which is the main program, which is program two to program five, and the PMTA, because the functions of the HR, legal service, security, they are centralized. So those are regarded as a shared service. So the bulk of the activities here are only limited to compensation and goods and services, which includes office accommodation, as I have indicated. So when it comes to the expenditures for IT related, then for both DPW and PMTA, it is centralized under this program. So this is more of a support. Then you can move to the next slide. Okay, over the... Okay, the spending over the medium term will be on management, corporate services, finance and supply chain management. The bulk of the expenditure, as indicated, is compensation and goods and services. Now, over the medium term, the allocation in this program is 1.5 billion. Then it means to deliver on those activities, the budget that will be available for this program, it is 1.5 billion. Then we can move to program two. Program two, intergovernmental coordination. Now, in this program, we have two branches, which is the intergovernmental relations and professional services. Now, the budget here is mainly to support programs that are related to the intergovernmental and professional services. Now, here also, the bulk of the budget is also under compensation and goods and services. If one can look at 21-22 financial year, for compensation of employees, we are projecting 40 million, and for goods and services, it's 15 million, and the overall budget is 63. So we also have budget under the transfers, which is 5.9 million. The 5.9 million allocated in this program, it is for the bursaries that are managed under professional services, because their objective is more of development for the built environment. So to deal with the development programs, they also have the budget for bursaries for the non-employees, which is 5.9 million. Then the budget for machinery and equipment, as you can see, it's very small amount. Then we'll move to the next slide, which is EPWP. I've already spoken to the analysis in terms of the activities relating to the program. Program three, EPWP, as you can see, we have the sub-programs, which is monitoring and evaluation. We have the infrastructure, we have operations, we have partnership support, and we have the last one, which is public employment coordinating commissions. Now, these sub-programs, they are responsible for the implementation of the EPWP programs. As you can see, the bulk of the budget It's allocated under the infrastructure and the operations. Now, under the infrastructure, the allocation relates to the provinces and municipalities for the integrated incentives. And under the operations, this is the incentives for the social sector, also the non-state sector programs. Now, if I go to the economic classification, the total allocation for EPWPA is 2.9 billion. Now, the bulk of the budget, as you can see, it's 2.6 billion. As indicated, the money will be spent on the transfers to the provinces for the integrated grant to provinces and municipalities, and also for the social sector and the non-state sector to implement the or for the management of those incentives programs. We have the budget for compensation of employees, and for 21-22 financial year, EPWP is allocated 183 million. And for goods and services, which including the support to the implementing agent, we have 168 million. Then under machinery and equipment for the computers and the office furniture and equipment, we have 1.2 million allocated to EPWP. We can move to the next slide. Now the following slide then it will be for program 4, property and construction industry policy and research. Now approximately 99% of the allocation this program, it is for the transfers, which are going to PMTE, Property Management Trading Entity, which goes to CIDB, CBA, and Infrastructure Development Coordination for PICC, which is assisting the department with the PICC mandate. Now, if I go to the economic classifications, then I'll start with the transfers. As indicated, that this is where 99% of the allocation is sitting. Then the bulk of the transfer will be under the departmental agencies and account. As indicated, this is where the PMTE is sitting with the allocation of 4.3 billion. Then the other one, it will be CIDB, CBA, and AGRIMA. Then the one below, the departmental agencies, foreign government, this is the Commonwealth allocation, which is allocated 29 million for the current financial year. And under the public corporation and private enterprise, we have 88 million, which is for PICC. Then the balance of the allocation, it will be under compensation of employees and goods and services. Maybe what I need to indicate under compensation of employees, it is the branch that are allocated in this program. We have two branches. The first one is the property and construction policy branch. The second one, which was which started in the previous financial year, it is the Infrastructure South Africa. So the budget of 33 million is for both branches. And the budget of goods and services, 38 million, is for both branches, with the bulk of the allocation allocated to ISA, Infrastructure South Africa. Then I will not be going to the analysis because I've already indicated the activities that will be happening in this branch. Then the last one is prestige policy. Under prestige policy, we have two sub-programs. The first one is the prestige accommodation and state functions. The second one is parliamentary villages management board. Now, all the activities that are relating to compensation of employees, goods and services for prestige, they are allocated under prestige accommodation. Under the parliamentary villages, it's a transfer budget that will be paid to the parliamentary village management board as an entity for the transportation of the MPs between the villages and the parliament, or to the areas where they will be going. Now, for Compensation and goods and services, we have 83 million. And as indicated, the budget includes salaries and goods and services. Then the economic classification below, it will be showing how much will be spent on compensation of employees for Prestige, which is 28 million. Then we also have goods and services with the allocation of 49 million. Maybe what I can also explain where the bulk of the money will be going under goods and services, it's for the state functions, which is allocated to the bulk of, which will also include the state funerals. So then we'll have the transfers and subsidies, as indicated that the transfers that we have here, it's mainly for Parliamentary Villages Management Board for the activities relating to the MPs, their movement or their transportation. Then we have machinery and equipment, 6.1 million. So here the budget for the machinery and equipment, it is not being spent in the department, but it is spent for the parliamentary villages and for the ministers' houses. So for 21-22 financial year, the allocation for Prestige policy, it's 94 million. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the Select Committee, DM and Acting DG and colleagues. I'll hand over to you, Anita, to present the PMTE. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, can we agree that this is by half past 11, it must be done so that at least we allow members. Remember I said you have an R. So you still have a part B that must be presented. So let me give you just 15 minutes. I hope my members will be very accommodative. Thank you.
Noted, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and other members. Thank you for the opportunity. I take note of the time constraint. I will take you as thoroughly as fast as possible through this. The PMT, as explained before, that is receives some of our allocation from DPW as a transfer. But besides that, that is the only appropriation we receive, and otherwise we have to generate revenue from our client departments and from our accommodation. This first slide is a summary of obviously audited outcomes and the MTF going forward. Over the medium term, we are expecting to receive 59 billion rand for 59.7 billion rand in revenue, but this will be going down from 21 billion in 2021, this financial year, to 19.6 billion in the last year. The reason for the decrease is because we have devolved the municipal services payment function to the client departments. So this was previously a source of revenue, but we only received what we were giving out in any case. So it is not as if we were keeping this money and generating investment on it. So that is why you will see that there's a negative growth in the PMT's budget over the MTF. We can move on. This is basically what I've discussed already. If we look at the budget allocation per program, the PMTE has six programs: administration, real estate investment services, construction management services, real estate management services, registry services, and facilities management services. If we look at the budget over the MTF, the 59.7 billion, the bulk of the budget is allocated to program four, which is real estate management services. In this program, we deal mostly with leases, the private leases that we lease in to lease out again to our client departments where we don't have enough facilities available to accommodate our clients. We also pay the property rates on our state-owned facilities to municipalities. And this is also where we pay municipal services. And that is why this budget is decreasing from 11 billion rand in this financial year to 8.9 billion rand in the outer financial year. The second largest program is the construction management services program. I just need to maybe alert the members that the audited outcomes, because construction is a capital expenditure, it doesn't show on our financial statements as per normal other government departments, and that is why it seems as if our construction management in the prior years were very low, but that is only because it's a balance sheet item. When we do the budget to balance our cash flow, we actually include it so that you can see and so that everybody can see the full picture. We are planning, I think Lwazi in his presentation already earlier, he had a summary of some of the key projects that we will be doing, and he also said that we will make available the other details. So over the MTF, we will be spending 15.7 billion rand on Program 3 or Construction Project Management. This includes client capital. That is where we are performing capital projects or executing capital projects for the clients. And it also includes our own refurbishments, upgrades, and any other additions that we're making to our accommodation. The next program that's significant is facilities management. That is the last one, Program 6, where we will be spending 12 billion rand over the MTF. And this is mostly on maintenance and repair of buildings. So this is not capital investment, but this is where we want to, this is where we are doing our preventative maintenance to make sure that we keep our buildings in the correct condition. Thank you. You can move on. the narrative we can skip past. I don't know, Chair, if I should be going through the per program. I think maybe just on a very high level. I'm sorry, I see when this, I don't know if it was when the presentation was converted, the figures doesn't look the way that they should be looking. The total expenditure for Program 1 is mostly on compensation, because this is administration. This is your functions like finance and HR and IT. Some of the money that we have set aside money also for IT infrastructure. We can move on. Under Program 2, this is real estate investment services. The compensation, we didn't do a full breakdown. Real estate investment services, this is where we are dealing with the clients, and this is more service delivery. So also the bulk of the budget will be going into compensation of employees, and some of the rest of the money will be going to goods and services, which is your normal, Aaron has already explained it, your normal stationery and other operational things that we need in the offices. Program 3. Yes, so the 4 billion, and this is very hard to read. I think I've already touched on this. Some of the money goes for compensation. This is our project managers that is dealing with the project. The bulk of the money goes for, it's now listed under goods and services, but it's actually the capital infrastructure that I referred to before. That is the 4.6, 4.8, and 4.8 in the outer year that we will be paying for that. Program 4. Yes, I think I've already, in my summary when I started, I already touched on all of these different programs. Chairperson, I will conclude my presentation there. Thank you, CFO. Thank you, Acting DG.
Thank you very much, Juanita. Chairperson, that brings us to the end of the presentation. Let me end back from the department. Back to the chair. Thank you.
Thank you, DG and the team for the presentation. We will now invite the honourable members to engage with the presentation. They can do that by indicating through the raise your hand option. I've already noted Honourable Kim Brachat, sir. Can we have members? Let's allow Honorable Tim and then Honorable Mandla Khai have indicated. Let's start with Tim. Good morning, Tim, and welcome after the test.
Yes, thank you, sir. So I don't know if it's really properly. I'm fortunate to be in a busy place. Anyway, just a couple of quick questions, sir. The first question is...
It's a bit of a struggle. It's a bit of a struggle to hear. Can you try to improve your audio?
Yeah. Can you hear now? I'm going to call today and then come back to you, please.
Right, Tim. Honorable Khai, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, DM, the acting DG and the DDGs and the CFO for the presentation. Chair, I am. when I try to read the presentation, there are areas that are very high level, and other areas would have details. So therefore, my approach would be to kind of like probe with regard to those areas that are high level in nature, because they did not necessarily giving us the specific information. So I have a couple of questions, Chair. First of all, maybe it is in the report itself as to how does the APPs integrate the economic recovery and reconstruction plan, given that the department, I mean, the infrastructure is one of the priority areas that are identified in the plan. Chair, with regard to, I would call it administration, because generally in other departments it's called the administration. This percentage of 100% financial performance, I take it when you say 100% financial performance, you mean that you'll have a clean audit outcome. That's how I interpret it, because you know, in other departments, when it comes to that area in the administration, the area of finance, the target will be unqualified audit opinion. But it's not clear here. It just says 100% financial performance. So now it leaves the one with his or her own interpretation as to what does that mean. So in my understanding, then it will mean that the target will be everything that has got to do with financial performance will be 100%, including the clean audit. So that is my understanding. So therefore, when the department comes back to us to report on this financial year next year, we'll expect therefore the clean audit, because this is my understanding of the 100%. But also on the percentage performance information level, the presentation talks about between 61% and 80%. This is where the confusion is for me. You are able to spend 100% of the budget, because also my interpretation of that 100% financial performance would mean that you'll spend 100% of the budget allocated. But when it comes to non-financial performance, now it will be between 61 and 80%. So I need the clarity with regard to this, whether it's confusion on my part, because it's not clear when you talk about this 100%, and also when you talk about between 61 and 80%. I take it that a 61 and 80% is a non-financial performance of the department. But then it has been reconciled with the 100%, which I assume will be the budget that will be spent. But I'm also worried about the vacancy rate. The target of 10% will only be achieved in the third year of the five-year period and also the fourth year. When in terms of the DPSA, departments are supposed to be achieving the vacancy rate should not be more than 10%. I know in the last APP, the target was 12%, which was still high. So now they dropped by 1%, the target to 11%, which is still high, because the target should be 10% or under. I'm also worried about the representation target of women in the senior management structure, the 40%. I mean, the department is 100% led by women, but when it comes to the senior managers, if now you could see that it's all the men that are presenting it. Women and the people with disabilities, the promotion of such, but in real terms, it's not reflected in the annual performance plans of the department, where it talks about 40% of women in senior position. But also in terms of a DVSA, when it comes to people with disabilities, it's 3%. But the target of the department is 2%. So I'm also worried about that, because it doesn't reconcile with the statement on the strategic objective of the department. We don't see anything with regard to the percentages in terms of the implementation of the workplace skills plan, and also on the outcome indicator of the department communication strategy. But also we don't see anything in terms of the percentage with regard to the procurement of goods and services from the BBBEE compliant businesses and SMMEs. You know, President talked about the 40% procurement of goods from of the women and youth owned businesses. There's nothing in terms of the annual performance plans of the department with regard to that, including the 30% minimum expenditure on procurement of goods and services from the SMMEs. So there's nothing. So I was saying that I have to probe now this information, because it is at a very, very high level in the presentation of the department. So that's why I have to probe for these final details. But also the percentage of invoices paid within the prescribed timelines of 30 days, that is not reflected in the programs of the or the presentation of the department, and also the financial disclosure by SMS members to the PSC, that is also not reflected with regard to the APPs of the department. I'm not sure, Chair, when it comes to monitoring and evaluation, whether the department will be conducting any monitoring and evaluation with regard to the impact of COVID-19
on the sectors that the department is involved in, infrastructure, construction, property, and so forth, or it has done so, I'm not sure. When it comes to the external environment, one of the issues that the department is raising, Chair, is the development of strategy to raise funds from other sources that are alternative to the fiscus. You don't see that reflected in the APP as to how they will be developing and achieving those strategies. When it comes to intergovernmental relations and coordination programs, there are about 21,132 hectares that will be released in quarter four. I would like that if we could get more information with regards to, in terms of the provinces, how is this distribution of the release of these hectares going to take place. Also on the same program, I'm worried about the target with regard to the numbers of city or precincts that have been identified for redesign and refurbishment as smart cities or precincts. It's only one. I don't know how many of these precincts in the country. I would be happy if at least one per province. Can be explained further. I think the DDG with regard to the construction projects management, he did highlight that there is information with regard to capital project that has been provided to Supera. I wish that it could have been given to us earlier so that we can also engage it, because there's amount of I don't know if this is whether it's 452 million, 552,907, which is a total amount. I hope that then the information that has been given to the committee secretary details the amount of each of those projects, not just the total amount of all the projects. There's a page that deals, or slide that deals with the capital projects. It indicates the kind of projects in each and every province. But what it doesn't do is to quantify in terms of the amount, how much each of those projects costs, except that it gives us a total amount. But the DDG was saying that the information has been given to the committee secretary. Same with the plant maintenance. Chair, I would, if that information has also been given to committee secretary, would appreciate it if it also includes the amounts. Chair, I just want to, I don't know where this one will fit in, the issue of unutilized vacant state-owned properties, I think under real estate management. I'm just reminded about what appeared in the newspaper. I think it was Sunday Times. That has to do with the acting secretary of parliament, who decided on her own to pay a particular rental amount. It gives an indication that there is no control in the department with regard to these properties that are unoccupied, that are rented by individuals. It looks like there is no system if we can be clarified whether there's a system and also whether the department knows where these properties are, or I think it's got to do with the asset register, Chair. Also, on the EPWPs, the DDG has also indicated that the information will be made available on the breakdown of each of the provinces with regard to the EPWPs, if we could get that information. Chair, the last part on the prestige. I think with regard to the budget, it is indicated how much has been given to the board that is managing the parliamentary villages. But in terms of the performance, there's nothing that relates to the parliamentary village. I saw the chat by Honorable Boshoff, and I fully agree with her. I thought that then under that particular program, you would see exactly what are the plans the department is having with regard to the state of the parliamentary village, other than just the budget that is allocated to the parliamentary villages. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hai, for the engagement. Let's revert back to Honourable Tim, Professor. Let's hope that you have sorted out the connectivity now.
Yes, sir. I hope so. Can you see me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, that's better.
Okay, yes, I'm in my constituency. We are working towards a date in October. So, my dear friend, Honourable Khai, has asked all the questions. So I thank him for that. He certainly covered most of the bases. There's just three questions. One very general and two very, very specific. The first one is possibly the lion's share of the department's budget is spent on salaries. And what can the department do to assure us of programs it has in place to make sure that we are getting value for money for all the salary you're paying for, especially amongst the EPWP workers? I really would like to get some feedback on that, because we have numerous complaints of those workers, of workers who literally do very little for the money they are receiving. What level of assurance can we get there from the department? Secondly, on the same issue, Honourable Khai raised the issue of skills. In our notes that you provided to us, it is noted there that in the last E&E, there were 2,500-odd persons lined up for skills assistance programs, but now the figure has gone down to 1,000. So there is a discrepancy of about 2,500 people. If the party could just give us a response on that. And then finally, my two questions, which I raised again and again and again. In our last question session in Parliament, the Minister promised me that by Friday of that week, he would be sending someone to talk to me about the Pantan police station and to engage with me. I have not had that certainty of that actually taking place. So unfortunately, that was a promise that was not kept. Maybe the DG could respond in that regard. And then finally, the DG is also promised to family on a number of occasions, but it appears this is the only time I can actually speak to the DG, so I will. The Pantan Home Affairs is still a problem. And can I please get a response on the progress of the Pantan Home Affairs so that I cannot start them, so that I can forward that back to the people of Pantan. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tim, for that. Honorable Dango.
Thank you, Chairperson. I sometimes get kicked in and out, so I'm not sure what the problem may or may not be. However, Chairperson, my question is the following. This department employs quite a few people. Have they looked at the apprenticeship system very carefully to apprentice people, especially young people, to come through the system so they can train them? And that's where I think we can take it forward. Otherwise, after having followed on Comrade Chai and Comrade Tim, there's not anything one can say except to be an apprentice question answerer.
Thank you, Honorable Dango, for that. Let's probably check on the chat. Can we have Rebecca reading those questions? Committee Secretary?
Thank you, Chair Pepper. The question on the chat, the first one from Honorable Matevula. The question reads as follows. Majority of infrastructure in South Africa is old and collapsing before they reach lifespan due to poor maintenance because provinces and municipalities inherited apartheid infrastructure which was designed to serve very few minorities. What is your department plan to build additional infrastructure or maintaining the existing ones? Number two, the Department of Public where the infrastructure is the custodian of state property, yet the department outsources all public works, infrastructure-related work to private sector, and in some cases without capacity to manage contracts. What the department plans to address the issues? The next one from Honorable Boshoff. Look at what is spent on the parliamentary villages. The state they are in is shocking. Why outsource the maintenance of the gardens to a contractor if there is enough DPW staff to do this work? If members do not phone the office to request the gardens, etc., to be attended to, it goes unattended. Please look into this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Committee Secretary, for that. Let me also join the queue.
Chair?
Yes, Mushari, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'm not going to waste your time. All my question was asked by Honorable Khai. But I just want to check also when the position of the DG is going to be filled because it's the acting position. But all of my question was asked by Honorable Khai. And Chair, I think I must emphasize the issue of women senior position in management. Really, the DM must look after this thing because there's no women and we're talking about the gender parity. It's a concern to us as members of this community committee. Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The issue of maintenance villages are raised by other members. I'm not going to repeat it. Thanks very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Marukhani, any take on their presentation?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me just say, because I've joined you very, very, very late, I was not part of the deliberation, but whatever comrades, honorable members have raised, I'm just covered.
Thanks, Honorable Marukhani. Like as I was saying, let me also express my appreciation from the Deputy Minister's team for the comprehensive presentation that they have made to us in terms of what we should expect this year in terms of putting to work the strat plan as informed by both the NTSF priorities and also the commitment to turn around our economy through reconstruction and recovery. On the capital project, Chair, let me right at the beginning also express my excitement. I see one of the capital projects is Kudu Mining Magistrates Office upgrading, repairs and renovation. That's where I am right now. So I'm happy. I'm happy to see that. President Botswanali is an old magistrate office, so we appreciate that it is receiving the attention of the department. We'll appreciate also if the department can also interact with the I think on the police station of Mutini that also needs a serious attention. But also from the infrastructure, the unproclaimed and proclaimed small harbors. I see that 12 of them that are proclaimed are in the Western Cape, and that those that are unproclaimed are in Northern Cape, where it claims here under Klipbaai and also Port Noloth, but also Port St. John in Eastern Cape and Port Alfred in KwaZulu-Natal. Maybe if we could be taken into confidence in terms of what are the processes that that must be followed to ensure that the proclamation is done and that the impact of the proclamation and not those that are proclaimed, its impact in terms of the delay, in terms of implementation, does it have any impact? That is the second question that I want to be clarified. Chair, relates to I think the commitment under risk, which is also linked to the estate management service. There is an area that I want the Deputy Minister to engage with the Minister of Defence on the headquarters of the Defence Intelligence through our interaction in my capacity, also in the other committees. It's a matter that has been raised for the last 2 years. I think where the headquarters it is located, I think there is a challenge. The leadership thereof has expressed a willingness to move from that area. It's highly from their observation. It's a matter that must be attended to as a matter of agency in terms of your mandate, because one of your mandates is to make sure that the clients are happy, the six clients are happy, and with the strategic nature of such an institution, when they have the reservation of that nature, and the sense is that they are powerless because they cannot prevail over, I think, the department to move them to where they have expressed their intention. Hence, I'm saying that I will appreciate if the DG can take it up. But obviously, I think the interaction between the leadership, political leadership of the department, both the defense and the public works, will to a certain extent address this as a certain matter of agency. What further complicate matters is that they have a property where they can go, but it does not have electricity. The water and electricity connection is a problem. So I'm raising this matter because it has been raised to us on two of our engagements. So I'll be happy if the DM can take it up with the Minister of Defense. The last one relates to the throughout the presentation there was reference to under the transformation of the built environment team spoke to the importance and centrality of the CIDB and the CBE to the broader transformation of the property industry, the commitment also to also ensure that the demography of those estate agents that are listed in J is also transformed. But nothing was said about the IDT. You'll remember that in our previous financial year, it was not presented to us, and it was important to get a sense in terms of where we are with regard to the reconfiguration of the IDT and how it is going to be factored in the annual performance plan. Of course, mindful of the fact that the leadership has taken a commitment to do away with it. Is that still the situation to close shop with regard to the IDT? It will be important if the committee can be updated on that. The last question is with regard to the breakdown of the 5 million work opportunities in terms of provinces. Of course, my suspicion is that it might be in the Excel sheet that Mr. Matlango made reference to. But if it is not, it will be important if the department can just provide us with the provincial breakdown of those 5 million work opportunities. Particularly drawing a distinction between the percentage of the permanent jobs of young professionals from universities and also from colleges, building on the point that was raised by Honorable Dango on the apprenticeship. I think there is an appreciation that at the level of artisans, there's not much tremendous progress that we are making in terms of building the next layer of leadership or workforce of the artisans in the country. So it would be important just to get a sense in terms of where we are. It is important that we link this question to our broader commitment in terms of job creation. As one of the central thrusts of the implementation of the phase 4 of the EPWP, that's where I thought I must rest my case. But of course, what also caught my attention is the particularly from the main vote, the transfer and subsidies to provinces and municipalities. The amount, if I'm not mistaken, you raised a percentage of 87, which clearly calls upon us to ensure that in terms of our oversight mechanism, in terms of ensuring that, as you have indicated right at the beginning, the issue of fit for purpose, the issue of integrity, the issue of ethical department, ethical leadership is quite important, particularly given the general thrust of corruption that has been thrown to the public and to the fore in terms of the revelation of Zondo Commission. I think it is important that a department clearly indicate to us what are the mechanisms in place that are put in place to ensure that there's no room for corruption, there's no room for unethical conduct. I'm raising this point mindful of, I think, two areas. One around Bay Bridge, if we could just get an update in terms of how far we are, because it continues to be a concern, but also I don't want to talk about the DG because I want to believe that the matter continues to be sub judice and is unfolding. But I think what will be important, the issue around the labor court ruling with regard to some of the senior managers the court ruled in their favor. If you could just probably get a reflection on that. Thank you, Deputy Minister. I'm not sure whether we're going to start with the DG and then you will come in terms of wrapping up. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think that's the approach we are taking. The DG and his team will answer, and where they fall short, I will come back. Thank you,
DM. DG, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the questions. Chair, I will commence first with the issue around the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan, and I'll outline how the department contributed to that plan, and my colleagues can then add some of the detail. With respect to SCM, Chairperson, we contributed towards localization, local procurement in particular, and SMMEs. With respect to construction project management, the department contributes towards local supplier industries for infrastructure delivery. With respect to mass public employment, our EPWP makes a contribution there. We also contribute to the presidential job stimulus, where the department created 1,560 immediate relief jobs between October and March this year. We also contribute to the Rural Bridges Program. It's our professional services branch. We contribute in the rebuilding of the SA construction sector through our IGR, and that particular contribution comes from the CBE as well as the CIDB. There's a maintenance contribution through our FM branch. Infrastructure Anti-Corruption Forum, the GRC branch makes that contribution. We have the launch of a Built Environment Infrastructure Forum taking place next week to oversee the implementation of the infrastructure plan, which is part of the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan. Then with respect to facilities management, we also have a contribution with respect to maintenance to create jobs and improve value and productivity of our assets. And we also have a job creation contribution through our small harvest program. So, Chair, I'm not sure if there's additional detail required with respect to the outline I've given, but my colleagues can come in if you choose, Chairperson, to provide additional detail when they make their contributions. I'd like to then hand over to the respective members of the Executive Committee to deal with their respective sections. The first one is in regard to the performance information level and the reconciliation to financial performance. So I'll call Mr. Maslangu to come back in to deal with that, and then we'll move on to the DDG Corporate Services, is represented by the Chief Director, Human Resources, Ms. Lachwaya, today. She'll talk about the vacancy rate, the levels of women in SMS, and what the department is doing to change that, the workplace skills plan, as well as the communication strategy. She'll take those tranche of questions. But first, Mr. Maslangu. Thank you, sir. Mr. Maslangu, over to you.
Thank you, Acting DG, and thank you, Chair and Select Committee members, for the questions. I'll just touch on the issues of the non-financial performance issues and the correlation or alignment to the budget. I think in the presentation by Mr. Mazibugo, it did allude to the point that if we look at the budget itself, a large percentage of our budget is basically transfers. So if you look at the remainder, 87 of it, if you look at the remainder, it's basically then compensation of employment goods and services within the department. That's the amount that then drives the operations of the department. So if you look at it from a statistical point of view, you're then basically looking at the balance of about 40% of the budget within the organization that then drives that 60 to 81% of the financial performance. So what we're trying to do in terms of the correlation here is that from a performance point of view and activity costing, that is the cost per activity, we want to say for every rand that is spent, it must then be delivered. The deliverable must be in that context that 100% is delivered. So you are looking at that kind of balance as well. Just by way of an example, I think when we come to the select committee, if the time allows and the committee through the chair, when we present the performance, you will then actually be able to see, we'll demonstrate that that to the committee. Just by way of example, just to show the correlation, you'll see that in the APP, as I was explaining, that it's output-driven. You'll find that maybe there's one or two indicators or targets at an APP output-driven level. But those two indicators, they represent probably two or one branch within the entire organization where you'll find that in that one branch, there's probably seven divisions, but two indicators. But when you look at the entire compensation as it's presented as 100% or 99% spent for the entire branch, but it does not correlate with the two indicators because you are also counting the indicators, you are also counting the expenditure of other branches that are not related to those two. And that's where now you find that if you achieve one of the two, it shows 50%, but 90% expenditure by all the seven divisions, which are not represented into two. So that then creates that. How we are dealing with that, Chair, when we present, we are presenting the operationals where you will find that all the seven branches or divisions within that branch will then have an allocation where you will be able to then show the alignment. So it's in that context that we will be then be presenting that information so that they will then be an easier way of looking at that correlation between what was actually spent, the actual amount allocated, and then the performance in relation to that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Luwazi. Ms. Lachwayo?
Good afternoon, members. The issue of vacancies, I think the last financial year, our target was 12% as it was indicated. Now it's at 11% because we know that we can be able to push the 1% and close that the gap. The challenge that we're having as HR or as a department is that maybe out of 20 positions that we're advertising, we find that 18 of these positions internal promotions. So that doesn't have any impact in the vacancy rate. So we find ourselves being in the same challenge time and again. But we are trying our level best in positions that, especially low-level positions, it's easy to get people from outside. So we are creating vacancies each and every time when we are promoting from internal. It's not a bad idea. It's a good idea because people need to be promoted. But I think maybe the way we are reporting, we need to indicate that we fill so many positions and the vacancy rate is not moving the way you expected it because it's internal promotion. So as it is now, as if we are not doing anything as a department, but we are really filling vacancies. We have added a new capacity with. We requested more capacity in the department so that we can be able to do a lot of capturing because capturing takes a lot of time. So it will be easy for us to fill those vacancies that we've already advertised. It will be easy for us to close the gap. We hope in the next financial year we'll be at 10% as required by DPSA. Coming to the issue of women in the department, it's a very, very critical issue that you need to look at as a department. It needs all stakeholders to participate, the line function, HR, and the entire team to ensure that we recommend women at senior management position. The strategy that we're putting in place is to ring-fence some of the positions for people with disabilities and also SMS members. Also, as HR, we can facilitate this, but we need line function to ensure that those positions are ring-fenced to be specifically target women in the department. But we know that we've already discussed at the ESCO level. The DG is very positive about the strategy that we want to put in place. So it will be easy for us to advertise those positions and earmark them for women, especially at SMS level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tembi. Chairperson, with your permission, if I can move to the CFO and the head of SCM, the CFO can begin to cover the issue of the 30-day process and progress we're making to improve our targets of paying within 30 days, and the head of SCM can talk about our targeted procurement with respect to BEE, women, youth, and the other targeted groups. So let me hand over to the CFO first and then the head of SCM. Thank you so much, CFO.
Thank you, Acting DG. Maybe let me also deal with the 100% financial performance that the Honourable Member raised. There are certain things that are compliance issues, like 30 days, submission of financial statements, spending of the budget. We want to achieve 100% on those things, which surely the Honourable Member is correct to say the systems that we put in place must result to unqualified audit opinion. As we have done in the main vote, we've been achieving the unqualified audit opinion because of that target that we put. Then on 30 days payments, we are making a significant progress, Chairperson. When we started certain programs, I think in 2018, at a time we had about 18,000 invoices that were not paid. At that time, not let alone that there were some invoices that were not paid within 30 days, but that was the number that we had at a time. Currently, we sit around for DPW, which is the main vote, we pay around 96% within 30 days, and there will be those few invoices that we are not able to pay because of different reasons, and we hold officials accountable because any invoice that is not paid to the service provider, it becomes a strain to that particular service provider. So one invoice that is not paid within 30 days is too many for the department. And we also have our own meetings on a weekly basis where we deal with payments of invoices across the regions. We have 11 regional offices, and we deal specifically with payment of invoices, which we really take it serious. And we also report to the minister on a weekly basis on the status of payment of invoices. I think Chairperson have addressed the issues that the acting DG wanted me to address. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CFO. Chairperson, let me move forward and bring in the other colleagues. We want to just respond to the impact of COVID-19 on our performance, and the Honourable Member Khai ask the question whether we have an MME or evaluation process being undertaken to measure the impact of COVID-19 on our functioning. And in this regard, Chairperson, through you, we've asked the CIDB to commission such a study. In fact, the CIDB have commissioned a study and released a report on the impact of COVID-19 on the construction industry. We're also looking to broaden the study to include other areas of our mandate, to include perhaps the property industry. So definitely making initiatives in this particular regard to understand the impact of COVID and to negate it on our functioning. Just to move forward now with respect to the EPWP, there were a few questions on EPWP regarding a breakdown, as well as questions on the transfers to provinces and municipalities. I would like to ask Ignatius Arillo, he is the chief director from EPWP representing the acting DDG, if he can come in and deal with all the questions around EPWP. Ignatius, I hope you heard them. Please come in. Ignatius, are you there?
ADG, I'm able to respond.
Thank you very much.
A minute left.
Oh, you're still here. Thank you very much, TJ. You may come in.
Thank you very much. So in terms of the EP, good morning, Chair, and good morning, Deputy Minister, and all the members. In terms of the EPWP, yes, there are targets per province that we do have and every public body. In terms of the broad breakdown, we have municipal targets and the municipal sphere in the next financial year overall must account to 255,320 work opportunities. The provincial sphere collectively must contribute about 330,316 of the work opportunities. And then the national sphere must contribute about 424,336,000 work opportunities. And that then equates just over a million in terms of the EPWP target. In terms of what we do when we disperse, we have to apply the Division of Revenue Act and strictly apply that, which means that it is certain compliance measures that need to be undertaken before any funding is disbursed. And that is what we do up front, sign agreements, make sure that project lists are in place that we then get for the work opportunities that will be undertaken utilizing the money. During the financial year, we then visit these particular projects through our public body visits, and particularly to look at the compliance in terms of those visits or those projects. What we then do is we then provide letters of escalation when there are areas of non-compliance, and this is what our DG then signs to the accounting officer to make them aware that they haven't fully maintained the records in terms of the work opportunities. What we then also do is we also send out withholding letters during the year if certain expenditure is not undertaken in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. What we also do is, if one moves to the next question, and I couldn't hear this question very clear from the member. However, we must remember that EPWP looks at elementary work, and there is supervision on all of these projects because these programs have very defined structures. You get the community work program, and they then got very clear supervision structures in terms of NPOs, in terms of supervision there, the working for programs, working for water. They've got clear structures in terms of how one supervises these particular programs. So all of these programs, whether it's an early childhood development program or a home-based community care, they will have the two components, as in any other job, which is the elementary workers. And then they also then have the supervision aspects. And a breakdown can be provided per province in terms of the targets. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CJ and Chairperson. We will provide all those documents to the committee. Moving on to professional services branch, Chairperson, there was a question about the skills program and the decline in the number of beneficiaries since the previous year. And Honorable Dango also asked a question about what kind of apprenticeship system we have in place to develop a skills pipeline program. And we have Tandeka from our professional services branch to answer that question on our skills pipeline and how we integrate this with the Council for the Built Environment to ensure that we start at the school level with the school leavers, with our maths and science program, right through into university, scheduling individuals into the candidacy program up until they are qualified professionals. So, colleagues, professional services, if you can explain this program, please.
Thank you, Acting CG. Good afternoon to the chairperson, deputy minister, and the members and colleagues that are present. My name is Vangile Manzini from Professional Services. I will be answering the question. I think, Acting DG, you have in a way covered what the skills pipeline seeks to do. We are trying to make a change and also contribute towards transformation of the built environment as a sector. We have structured our programs in a way that the one program will feed into the other so that we can therefore make a change. Like the Acting DG is saying, we are starting the programs at a schooling level where we are influencing firstly, the taking up of math and science as gateway subjects so that our learners post-matric, they can then access built environment studies at tertiary institutions. So we start with the learners from grade 9 so that we can bring in role models as well, young people that are qualified as professionals that can speak to the learners and influence that they take up math and science so that ultimately later they can then enter the built environment. We then would sponsor these learners, grade 12, once they get into tertiary institutions, we'll sponsor them as a department. We give them a full bursary, which will include everything. I mean, from their residence tuition, even including a monthly stipend, as well as that they should be able to get laptops as well, so that there is no hindrance as far as their studies are concerned. Once they are done with their studies, and even in between, I must indicate that we do have a bursary care program. You would note that a few years back, EXA had done a study, and it was revealed that only 30% of learners that take up studies, especially in engineering, finish in record time. But because we have this bursary care program, we are having professionals that partner with us. They provide academic support and personal support to these students. We are currently sitting at more than around, I think it's currently around 90% pass rate of our students. So we have a very good pass rate of students who manage to finish their qualifications on time and who even finish those particular qualifications. They will then come into the department, into the internship program, later on be translated into the young professional program, wherein we give them structured mentorship towards professional registration, because ultimately we want these students to register as professionals so that we can begin to change the face of the built environment. And then once they've acquired the necessary professional registration, later on they will then be appointed into the department vacancies. So that is also how we are trying to contribute towards the reduction of the high vacancy rate, especially in the PMCE area. So you would also, from the same program, you would have learners as well who would want to take up the artisanal program. They would also be taken through, I mean, the required mentorship so that they register as artisans and that later on they can then be appointed into our workshop structures. So that's, in essence, that is how the program is run. I must also indicate that at the current point in time, we are currently working with the Department of Higher Education and Training. We are developing an artisan development plan that is aligned to the infrastructure plan for the country. I think it's due to the Cabinet of Khutla. I think it's next month, if not end of this month. So we should be having a first draft within the next couple of weeks. So that is how we are trying to make a mark as far as the transformation of the sector. And I must also indicate that we are biased towards, obviously, the black child, because we are trying to change the face of the built environment is characterized by mostly your elderly white males, and that is essentially what we are trying to change. So obviously, we do have a bias towards an African child, especially also as well as girl children as well. So we do have an emphasis in terms of how we need to support these young people to ensure that we take them up from the foundational level, supporting schools as far as math and science is concerned, right through to them becoming professionals in the sector and coming to make a difference within the department. So I think I will stop there for now, Acting DG. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tandeka. That's appreciated. Chairperson, there were a number of questions on the parliamentary villages. Honorable Khair raised a concern on the state of the parliamentary villages, and this was followed up in a different way by Honorable Bosho. And I'd like to ask Mzwandile Sazona, who is our chief director for the Prestige Project, to answer those two, please. Mzwandile?
Thank you very much, TG, and thanks to the chairperson. We have noted, members, about the state of the parliamentary villages, both villages. The department has undertaken a project, a maintenance project, to maintain the facilities. I must say, during the course of this week and last week, we did a go around the villages to look at the quality of work that has been undertaken by the service provider. We were not quite entirely happy about some of the work that was undertaken in some other units which have been completed. The nature of the maintenance that we're doing, or the manner in which we are doing the maintenance, we started with the first phase, which was the first 50 units, which we are now reviewing that program. Kuha, who's our implementing agent, we are meeting with them tomorrow to discuss our concerns and the quality of work that the service provider is providing. But we will review the program as we move along. We have now suspended the further continuation of that program until we resolve the issues. We have further also issued the letters of notice of poor quality of work to the service provider. Particularly, we have done that to Kuha, and Kuha in return has done that to the service provider and to the principal agent. I need to mention as well that there is a process that we are putting in place for units like those that are the prefab units, which are beyond being renovated, which are not part of this program. In that project, we will demolish those units and to rebuild other units in the areas where those units are, and in other spaces that are kind of vacant, to upgrade the quality of the units, particularly in Acacia Park. Thank you very much, TJ.
While still there, the last time when you engaged, Honorable Data says, made a humble request that the gymnasium that you constructed in Acacia must be equipped. As I remember that it was indicated it is the parliamentary responsibility to equip it, but there has not been any movement. It's just a white elephant that is there. Can you also look into that? I hope I'm representing Honorable Professor correctly on this one.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. We have made some progress on this matter. If I may remind the members, this has always been an issue of whose responsibility is it, whether that of Public Works or that of Parliament. We have reached a conclusion after an oversight visit by the members of the Portfolio Committee of Public Works that Parliament is going to issue a request for proposals from various service providers. That has gone out on the market, and that service provider will then provide the gym facilities, including training for people who need some kind of training. We will get a report from Parliament and how far they are with that process. But it is ongoing. Our contribution as Public Works will basically be to contribute the venue. We'll also subsidize the electricity and do the maintenance of the facility. That will reduce the cost related to the usage or for the members to use those gym facilities. I think in 2 months' time, we should be able to come with better progress in this area. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you, Mzanile. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, with respect to the question on the IDT, we have engaged in the appropriate processes given the financial difficulties experienced by the IDT. And the minister, deputy minister, and the senior management are embarking on a process to amend the organizational form of the IDT and to turn it into an organization that is more sustainable financially, in particular going forward. I'd like to ask our chief director, acting DDG IGR, Adam Dombani, to give the current status of that process. Thank you, Chair. Adam.
Thank you so much, DG, and good afternoon to Chair and honorable members. With this entity, IDT, we can confirm that we are aware that there was uncertain future about its sustainability. So that matter has been attended to by the department following the consultation with Cabinet. And now what we're doing is just to put a good corporate form that will sustain this entity. We're working on that. The business case is being finalized. That will be engaged with the Cabinet so that we have a go-ahead to implement all our strategies. And again, we're also assisting the entities with the financial resources to ensure that we fund their operations. We did that in the fourth quarter where we sort of, you know, get a need. We assisted them with 20 million to fund their operations. On this current financial year, we're working with them. They're busy coming up with the motivation and the plan so that we support their operation on need basis. We're doing this because we are aware that this entity needs to sustain itself. So we're working so hard to come with a financial model and HR model. We're also assisting them on the moratorium. There was a moratorium on the appointment of staff. That moratorium has been sort of, you know, uplifted. So we are supporting them to sort of, you know, have the resources to assist them. The big thing for this entity now, they need to work so hard to ensure that there is a business generation. They need to sort of, you know, mend the broken relationship with clients. It's very much important to do that because their revenue base has sort of, you know, declined. And we also need to have negotiations with new business opportunities, which need to make sure that in the area where they don't have a footprint, they're able to sort of, you know, consult and have a footprint so that their business go back into operation. And we can confirm that in this current financial year, the APP for this entity has been finalized by the minister and the PM. We signed the APP and also did the shareholder compact agreement with them, which we call a service level agreement. And currently, we finalize the process of appointment of the new board. The Cabinet has supported minister's recommendations. And now what we're doing, we're finalizing the last leg, where the Master of Fire Court must give us a letter of authority to appoint the board to start to operate. So that's where we are in terms of the IDT. So we're dealing with the future prospects of this entity because it's a critical entity that needs to support us on the delivery of social infrastructure. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, I'd like to go to our real estate investment branch. There was a comment regarding the 21,000 hectares released in quarter four. And there's also a question on the headquarters for DI, Defense Intelligence. I will assist her with that one if she's not got the update, but I'd ask her to please come in and talk about the land release question and the land release program if she wishes to add to it. Thank you, Sasa. Subban is our DDG. Please come in, Sasa.
The reported DG, maybe on the IDT update, if you could get that in writing, that would be quite good.
Thank you, Chairperson. That's noted. Sasa, over to you.
Thank you, Acting DG. Good day, DM, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. In terms of our land release program, we've released land right across all provinces. Just as an example, I can indicate the land reform program constitute land release for human settlements, for restitution and redistribution. Now, where restitution is concerned, our dependency is with Department of Agriculture and Rural Development. And I'm happy to report last year we released over 160 land parcels with approvals that we got from both DM and Minister. And so we settled submitted for settlement to the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development all of these claims that will be conveyanced accordingly and be distributed to the communities. So for the land redistribution program as well, we've released from our asset register over 17,000 properties, and that also cuts across various provinces. And that's also the dependency in terms of the availability of land that meets the particular criteria for land redistribution, and that's mainly for the agricultural sector, where there's water resources and the land is not in mountainous regions and where there's farmer support, et cetera, provided. Human settlements, equally, we've done fairly well, although we'll intensify that program this year. And that's also the dependency with human settlements and the HDA. And also we release land right across most provinces. The human settlements program, we align to the priority housing development areas, and we release land accordingly. And linked to that, we also run, and I think there were questions around our planning and precinct development program. We align our development to the priority housing development areas of human settlements. And linked intrinsically to that is the National Spatial Development Framework, as well as the IUDF, which is the Urban Development Framework as developed by COCTA. And so we align our new developments in terms of precincts planned. Now, in that regard, we've targeted to have precinct development across 50 urban areas and 50 rural areas, spanning across 257 odd municipalities, as well as in the region of 600 odd areas. So it's quite an extensive program that we will run over the next 5 to 10 years. And our targeting is based on the planning frameworks that are in play, which is, I've mentioned, the NSDF and the IUDF, as well as our own spatial framework that we developed, where we target the areas that have the highest economic potential for growth, the areas that require government intervention. That's linked to provinces, and I think Luwazi made that point, and municipal development, as well as our most deprived areas. Although we acknowledge that 79% of our population is concentrated in urban areas, and we look in around that as well in terms of development. So in terms of prioritizing these three precincts that we have indicated will be smart precincts that will support, the development of the redesign of cities as smart cities. We can only, obviously, the development of cities are within the COCTA and the municipalities ambit. But as national, we can support development by creating smart government precincts. And in around that, we've targeted three. This year, we've targeted one, which is Salvacop, which the development has just started, the bulk services processes in terms of installation of bulk services should start in the next 2 to 3 months. And then we've targeted Polokwane and Kunene, which is in Gauteng, over the outer years. And that then also aligns to the development area. So we try to ensure that our development is integrated and that we speak to the various government programs and we link into our sector departments, which is COCTER, Human Settlements, and Rural Development, so that we can support integrated development and align to the district development model as well. I think for the precincts going forward, in terms of our operational plan, we're targeting another 6 precincts, which is mainly in the rural areas. Chair, I'll pause there. Thank you.
So, are you able to deal with the DI building? Or I suppose that will be for Neleti. Let me bring that particular area in, Chairperson. Yeah.
I can, DG, if you allow me, I can indicate that we also are working with the Department of Defense, although there's been a bit of lull to have the Dakwa Road precinct developed further. I think in around there was the Exaro building, which was identified by the Department of Defense and also identified by COCTA. So although COCTA is in a lease at that particular building, we're looking at the long-term solution for the Department of Defense within that precinct. And then over a period of time, we'll see how we can integrate that particular building for the Department of Defense, because I think rightfully so, that particular precinct will have the best fit for the Department of Defense because they are concentrated in and around that particular area. So our planning and precinct development component also acknowledges that. Thank you, DG.
Yes, thank you very much, Sasa. Chairperson, with your permission, I'd like to go to Real Estate Management Services. That's our leasing portfolio. There are a few questions there. The one talks to the unoccupied properties, vacant state properties, and how we're dealing with those. And the other question comes from the Honourable Member Tim. He raised the question of the accommodation for the Department of Home Affairs. I've noted his comment about the follow-up question that outstanding. I'll raise it with the Office of the Minister, and I do note that I've also checked on it. I believe they're still outstanding. With respect to the initial response on Home Affairs, I believe we responded through parliamentary questions, but nevertheless, we will be in touch with the Honourable Member, and I have my colleague, Neleti Makubele, will also give an update of the current status of the Home Affairs accommodation in Pinetown. And she'll also deal with the question on the vacant state properties. Neleti, over to you.
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, the Deputy Minister and my colleagues. DG, on the vacant properties, I think what we can report is that indeed Honourable High is right that the department was handling this vacant properties not in a uniform way. So regional offices were doing different things at any given time. So towards the end of 2020, the department embarked on a process to develop a strategy that seeks to make uniform how we deal with these properties. The strategy has been developed. It's now in its final stages. We just need to finalize a few issues with the minister. And once it is approved, then we will start implementing the new processes. All we're trying to achieve there is to make sure that the type of lease agreements that we sign are the same with the various categories of people that are applying for our properties, and also to make uniform the type of rates that we charged, because it differs the type of people that we have. Some are just businesses trying to make money, and some are NPOs, and we also have an element of women empowerment and youth empowerment. So the department has to balance all those things in the strategy so that when we do receive offers from the public, how do we then handle those uniformly? So that process is in its finalization stages. As soon as we get a go ahead, we will proceed with marketing certain properties. With regards to Pinetown, Honourable Chairperson, I think we have failed the Department of Home Affairs, but not necessarily deliberately, or I believe it was not really something that we could have avoided. But what had happened was the department went out on tender, awarded the tender for the accommodation, and then unfortunately the landlord that was awarded then failed to perform. He was put on terms, still failed to perform, and we were not able to move the Department of Home Affairs into that said building. So the process was cancelled, and we have started afresh now. I'm informed by my colleagues in the regional offices in Durban that they are now going out on tender. The tender will be out by next week, the 21st of May, and they are hoping to finalise the process before the end of June. So if all goes well, we should be able to have a new landlord by the end of June, and then the process of tenant installation, but then that will be a process that we'll be working with the Department of Home Affairs with, depending on the state of the facility that we find. And then, DG, I think on the defense intelligence, there's not much to report from my side except to confirm that indeed the lease where they are currently has expired. And we still don't have indication from the client whether they want to renew that particular lease, but I'm gathering from the chairperson that they want an alternative accommodation. Accordingly, our client relations manager that deals with defense has actually written now to the defense just to get an indication from them what exactly is the position that they would prefer, and then we will execute whatever they prefer. If it's alternative accommodation, they'll give us an indication. If they want to renew where they are, they will also give us an indication and we'll execute as such. Or perhaps we allow the deputy minister, as requested by the chairperson, we can allow the deputy minister to engage, and then we can take cues from that particular engagement and execute the decisions that will be arrived at. DG, I'm not sure if I forgot anything, but I think those are the three issues that I picked up from my side as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Neleti. Chairperson, I'd like to move to some of the written questions on the chat. And the Honourable Matebula raised two issues, the one on the state of infrastructure, and asked the question, what are we doing to build new infrastructure as well as maintain existing infrastructure? And the Honourable Member went on to also concur with another question about why we are outsourcing to the extent that we are. So I have our head of the construction project management, Mr. Vasnar Labangwane, as well as the head of facilities, Mr. Ngosana Kubeka. Mr. Kubeka will also take the questions on the harbors, who is also responsible for the harbors, but first deal with those two questions. Ngosana, perhaps you can talk about maintenance of infrastructure and what the maintenance program looks like and how we are approaching it. And then the two of you can talk about building a new infrastructure. Perhaps Vasnar can focus on that area. And you can also deal with the question of outsourcing, given that you are overseeing the use of implementing agents. And Vasnar can also comment on that. If you can please attend to those two questions, please, colleagues. Ngosana first and then Vasnar. Thank you.
Let's agree that for the response it will be 4 minutes, so that we then give over to the DM to wrap up, and then we close because time is running out for us now. Thank you.
Please let's speed it up.
Thank you, Acting DG. Afternoon, Chair, members, Deputy Minister, and EXCO colleagues. I will talk briefly, Chair, on the maintenance. Our strategy is that all new facilities that we are constructing now, we are putting in what is known as total facilities management, where we are appointing a service provider who will then deal with the maintenance, both preventative and corrective. So that is the first thing that we're doing with regard to maintenance. The second one, DG, is that within our APP targets, we have put the activity of doing conditions assessment on some of the facilities, as well as critical components like your lifts, your HVAC, your water systems. where we are then developing maintenance plan. The plans will then inform the type of maintenance that we must do with a bias towards a preventative maintenance, and we're targeting 70% of that. And in that, Chair, we are appointing term contracts, which are appointed to deal specifically with those particular services. We are also reducing our reactive maintenance, because currently our default maintenance approach is reactive. We want to reduce it to about 30% so that the 70% is preventative. So those are some of the activities that we are doing. And we have started putting TFM in some of the critical buildings. In Gauteng, for an example, one military hospital, we've got a total facilities management service provider there. The headquarters of DPSA, as well as Civitas building, and all these are in Gauteng. We also have a whole list of other facilities that we will be putting at the total facilities management within the next couple of months, DG and Chair. These include the parliamentary village, both the parliament and the houses, the Robben Island Museum, the two military hospitals in Cape Town, as well as the three military hospitals in Bloemfontein. We are also targeting all the newly built courts, which include the High Court in Polokwane, as well as the High Court in Mbombela. So those are some of the facilities where we'll be putting the total facilities management. We are finalizing the budgets with the clients so that we are then appoint the required service providers. Chair, with regards to the harbors, what has been happening is that the 13 proclaimed fishing harbors in the Western Cape, these were built in the 1940s. And there have never been any fishing harbor that has been built in the country. So what we have done now, we have targeted three nodal areas in the coastal provinces. Northern Cape, we have targeted Port Nolloth, Hondenklipbaai, and Kleinzibaai. But for phase one in the Northern Cape, we are targeting Port Nolloth. In the Eastern Cape, we've got about five areas, which include Port St. John's, Coffee Bay, Mbizana, and Kowe River Mouth, and Port Grosvenor. But for phase one, we are targeting Port St. John's. And in KwaZulu-Natal, we are targeting Port Edwards, among the other areas that have been identified. So where we are now, we'll be conducting the feasibility studies. We are being supported by the Chinese government through the binational agreements, where they are bringing in the technical expertise to conduct these feasibility studies. We will be matching those with our own South African team. The plan is that they will be appointing their technical team by end of May. We have already appointed our team as the South African government. They will then, in June, we are expecting to have a planning meeting where then the Chinese delegation will come and go to the site visit. And then we had planned, Chair, that the feasibility study will take 9 months, where we will then have master plans and bankable projects. We've already in the Port St. John's are already ahead of the other areas, because in Port St. John's we have done already three feasibility studies for the waterfront, a harbor, as well as the tidal pool. So what we'll be doing with this Chinese grant is just to consolidate those three already done feasibility studies. So we will see traction firstly in the Eastern Cape as opposed to the other provinces. The impact, Chair, is that, as you have asked, is that the coastal communities in these coastal provinces are not benefiting from the ocean's economy. So that is why we are bringing in these fishing harbors, so that the local community can benefit from the fishing. There are also commercial activities that are happening in the harbors. where your companies that are selling fish are able then to generate work opportunities in those areas. But also we also create slipways. The slipways, then we pull the vessels that are need fixing and repairs from the ocean. And that also creates employment because you create local beneficiaries in terms of the skills that is deployed in terms of those people that are fixing the damaged vessels. So those are some of the beneficiaries and the programs that we are doing in the harbors. So with these new harbors, we are hoping that we will create smaller local communities within those harbors where the local communities can then benefit once the harbors have been developed. I will leave it at that, Chair, so that I can allow my colleague.
Yes, thanks. Thank you, Nkosana. Just quickly, a minute for Vasnar about your construction program, and then I'll answer the last two questions on the Labour Court and the Bait Bridge. Thank you. Please, Vasnar, quickly.
Thank you, DG, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and the members. The department has plans to construct new facilities, including to upgrade those that are existing. Within those particular plans, the question that has been raised is, why are we continuing to use external resources to implement or manage this particular portfolios? Let me respond in this way. We do have a wing that only deals with the management of this particular program where we have outsourced. We have another wing where we do have the internal professionals who are directly involved with the production. In other ways, we're executing those particular activities as designed by our in-house professionals. But why do we do it this way? Firstly, we consider the available capacity within the state. The available capacity within the state does not necessarily match the amount of the programs or projects that we're executing as government. Hence, the biggest chunk of those professionals that are here deals with the review of the designs, norms and standards for all the programs that we have outsourced to be implemented by those outside professionals or consultants. The second category, which does also match in terms of the amount of programs that are supposed to be executed by those professionals in-house, we looked at how many professionals do we have, what number of projects can they implement in-house. And many of those particular projects, we have assigned them from head office, also at regional levels, where they are doing those particular projects in-house. So basically, if we had all the capacity that we require, we're supposed to do this on our own. But because of the scarce capacity of these particular skills that are required in this built environment, we cannot do it on our own. We have to share it with the private sector. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vasnar. Chairperson, quickly to answer the questions on the Bait Bridge and the Labour Court matter. Chair, I think you were referring in particular to the matter before the Bargaining Council, and I'd like to address that one first. We did have an application by 60-odd staff whose contracts had expired in December 2019. They applied to the Bargaining Council asking for reinstatement in the department, and the Bargaining Council did rule in their favour.
Can we agree on this approach? Those two responses, can you give them to us in writing so that we do not deprive the Deputy Minister?
Thank you, Chair. That's fine. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much. Thank you.
Before we get disconnected, DM, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Let me once again appreciate the opportunity. Chair, let us agree. Maybe let me first deal with the issues that were directed to me. We will try and interact with DOD to try and resolve the issue. But let me try and illustrate the direction that the department is taking. The one that says we really need as a department, because the whole nation depends on us in terms of the notion that the president has pronounced on, that infrastructure will be the flywheel on which we rebuild our economy. And we are focusing on infrastructure, or what is known as the built environment. Whether you talk the entities and the councils that we work with in terms of the skills component, but we need to also understand that one issue, if you talk skills, lack thereof impacts on the next issue. I'll make an example on the women. We know that generally we come from a past where the built environment has been a preserve of maids. And we are now gradually changing that, which means we start right at school and we encourage young women to take the fields of study so as to influence the direction and the skills mix that we have currently. And therefore, that's not going to be like an overnight experience. I'm trying to respond to the question that the department is led by two women, but its top structure is male-dominated. We train very hard to attract women, but it is through systems that we put in place where we will be able to change the skills base of the country so that we have the necessary skills at the levels we need them. More than that, Sasa tried to give you the picture of what we do around land and land redistribution, which is one other tool with which we transform society. Last week or 2 weeks back, the deputy president was with the minister of agriculture, land and agrarian reform, Minister Didiza, and our minister, close to Plekkenberg Bay in a place called, I think it's Covey. They were handing over land. And in the coming week or two, our president will be in a place called Tafelkop. Even there, it will be land, distributing land for farming, for people to also transform the landscape. So we are hard at work as a department to realize the progress that the country needs. There will be teething problems here and there, and there will be cries here and there. Even in the case that you were referring to, the understanding there should be, it was not to say we want people to be out of the job, but we wanted the department to correct itself, because if you look at the history of that experience, those people have been renewed and renewed for years. Now, as individuals, they are not benefiting from the employment opportunities that they should, the benefits that they should be enjoying, because they are contract workers all the time. And we are saying to the department, employ full-time employees where you need them, such that there is no abuse of labor. where we are. I'm kind of trying to say, Chair, we're trying to get to steer the department in the right direction. And with your support, as you really ask the pertinent questions and relevant questions, we appreciate that kind of questioning because it helps us to drive the message home where it must go. Thank you very much for the opportunity once more. Where there are responses that need to be written, the DG, I take it, he has taken note. We will help each other where he falls short. But we indeed appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, dear. Let me also express our gratitude to the leadership role that you have displayed today and your team for responding to all the questions that the members raised. And secondly, let me also thank our the members of the SLEP committee, the parliamentary staff for the work that they have done in terms of preparing for this meeting. And the meeting now stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Long live the Chair.
Thank you, Pelena.
Thank you.